General Home, Reel 6. Asking you if the battalion were fed up because they were still in the same place after the winter on the island.
The answer is no, I don't think. I think everybody saw the end of the war coming and they were just waiting and hoping.
Where were you when the Germans surrendered?
Well, somewhere in the eastern part of Holland. I remember moving out of the island. I can remember going through Arnhem. I think there was nobody in Arnhem by then. And going through various villages, where, of course, wherever we went, we got the most tumultuous welcome. That's what I remember most about the last few days.
Did you cross over into Germany?
Yes, at some stage. Whether it was before VE Day or after, I can't remember. But we went in, and we were the battalion headquarters. Central battalion area was in a place called Unna, UNNA, which was not far from the Ruhr somewhere.
Mm. What sort of place was that?
Well, I was in a little village called Langscheda. I hope our behaviour wasn't too bad, but I mean, I can remember we requisitioned houses to put the soldiers in, and whatever we said before the civilian authorities managed to take over was complied with without...
I was going to ask how the Germans behaved when you...
Well, I don't remember anything, nothing untoward, but... We got our soldiers supplied with wireless sets and so on, and we really never asked where they came from. They just appeared. If we said to the local chap, we'd like so many wireless sets for our soldiers. And I can remember taking over the local pub in Langscheda, and there was quite a lot of beer somehow. Whether we paid for it or not, or if we did pay, I don't think we paid much for the beer. And we had some quite convivial evenings, I remember, in the local pub.
What condition was the village in? Was it?
I don't think Langscheda, where we were, had been damaged. No, I think it was smallish, was it? Village.
How long were you there?
Well, I left. We got there, say, early May. Mm. We were May, June, July, August. I should think we were there for certainly 3 months, because I left the battalion. At that time, the 3rd Division was being re-equipped and remanned to lead the assault on Japan. And a lot of the older soldiers in the 3rd Division, I mean older by war experience and everything else, who'd done a lot of fighting, were being drafted out of the 3rd Division and replaced by a lot of younger people and so on. And we had commanding our battalion in the time of Zetten and on the island, a CO called Colonel Butler, who eventually became General Sir Mervyn Butler. And he belonged to the South Lancashire Regiment. That was his regular regiment, but he'd been sent to us to command 2nd Essex. And at the end of the war, he was removed from 2nd Essex and sent back to command the 1st South Lancs, who were in Northern Army Group. I don't know which division they were. Oh, they were in the 3rd Division. Of course they were. And he went and took over this, and then he got in touch with me in 2nd Essex and said, would I like to go to him in the 1st South Lancs as his second in command? So he was a great chap, and he became a great friend of ours. And I said, yes, I would like to join him. So I joined in about August, I think, 1st South Lancs.
Did you retain your own cap badge, or did you...
No, I had to put on South Lancs.
South Lancs.
Badges. Mm. And I can't remember where I joined them. But what I do remember is, of course, that the Japanese capitulated in mid-August sometime.
Yes. I was going to ask you what your thoughts were when you heard about the use of the atomic bomb.
Well, the 3rd Division, instead of going to Japan, was sent out to the Middle East. Mm. And we went to Egypt. Mm. And we went to Ismailia, I think.
But, I mean, do you remember hearing about the attacks on Hiroshima?
Well, I must have done. I must have done. But I can't really remember at this stage. But...
How did the South Lancs compare to the Essex as a body of soldiers? Well,
I think much the same. Very difficult. I'd been with the 2nd Essex since 1940. So I suppose I'd died in the war, as far as they were concerned.
Indeed.
And the South Lancs of that time were, I say, they were being reinforced and other people were changing over. And I should think about 20 different regiments were represented amongst the officers in that South Lancs battalion at that time, all of whom had come from other battalions in 21 Armoury Group. I think the soldiers were in the same. I don't think they'd been moved about much. But under Colonel Butler, who was a great CO, I think the thing settled down pretty quickly, and he got his own, stamped his own personality on it. And we stayed in Egypt, not long, only a month or two, and then we went up to Palestine.
What was going on in Egypt when you were there? Was there anything
happening? Not much, as far as I remember. Nothing. Well, I mean, I don't think we did anything anyway. We were encamped, I think, in Israel.
Were you in camp or in the barracks?
No, we were in tents. Tents. El Bella, does that ring a bell on the canal? I think, maybe. And then we went up to Haifa.
Did you know what was going on in Palestine before you
Well,
got
I think we were briefed, yes. And the 3rd Division, I think.
Yeah.
Well, the 3rd Division went up to Haifa. And we were in Haifa. Quite an interesting time. The target, really, then, as far as I remember, were the Palestine police. They were the ones. The Stern Gang, wasn't it, were after. And there was a splendid Palestine police officer, commander in Haifa, called Cafferata, and he was an Irishman. A lot of them, Palestine police at that time, had come from the Royal Irish Constabulary. And Cafferata was a great chap, and he survived. He was eventually removed from Palestine by the authorities because he was number one target in Haifa. It didn't really affect us very much as a battalion. There were various incidents, and we deployed. And
I was going to ask you where you know what you were actually doing in an operational sense.
Well, we were backup to the police.
Yes.
And reacting really to.
Where were you based in the city itself?
In some hill in the hill above
Haifa.
Yeah.
And what sort of incidents were happening?
Well, I mean, Cafferata, I remember. He was. His house was not far from our battalion, where some of our battalion headquarters was. And he used to drive down to his office into Haifa every morning. And one morning his car was ambushed. But the driver put his foot in the accelerator and he got away with it.
Well, just drove through.
He drove through, yeah. I can't remember exactly what we did after that sort of incident.
Yes. I was going to ask you what sort of operations you were carrying out or whether you were concerned with training as a main activity.
No, I think we were really... I don't think we did carry out operations as such. We were there as a backup to the police.
How were you liaising with the police? How was that?
Well, our CO, Colonel Butler, who was himself an Irishman and Cafferata, became bosom friends. And there was no trouble at all. I mean, I can remember... Cafferata's second command, I remember, was a good bloke. And the CID man was a fellow called Conquest, who was a great big chap, jovial chap. And actually, after we left, we understood he had been killed by the Stern Gang. Mm. So he was a prime target as well. But at that time, I mean, the Stern Gang were blowing up police stations and all this. But while we were there... The police had quite a firm grip on Haifa, Palestine police, and the police station was still intact when we left.
What was the strength of the police in Haifa?
I can't remember.
Do you remember what you were supposed to do in the event of an attack on the police station?
I don't think there was any set plan. I don't think there was. No.
Do you remember if you carried out any searches or... roadblocks.
I don't, actually. I don't. I think perhaps we did, but my mind is pretty hazy, I think, about that.
What do the troops think about the situation in Haifa and Palestine?
Took it as a matter of course, I think. I think nothing was surprising at that time. One thing I do remember is watching... At that time, we had an immigration policy. We allowed in 1,500, was it, a month.
There was a quota.
Quota. That was the quota. And the rest were put in Cyprus to wait. And I can remember watching one ship coming in, and I think they were illegal immigrants trying to come into Haifa. And it was quite a small ship, and the thing that stuck in my memory was that you couldn't see above the waterline, so to speak, you couldn't see an inch of the ship because there were bodies everywhere. It was absolutely crammed to the gunwales. And well, I can't remember, I suppose it was turned back, that particular ship, and made to go to Cyprus.
What happened then after Cyprus?
Well, after 6 months,
yes, you were in Haifa,
the division was relieved by another division, and we went back to Egypt.
Mm. What were you doing in Egypt?
Training.
This is training for desert warfare.
I suppose. We're training in the desert, I mean, not for any particular
war. Was it back to Ismailia?
Yeah, I think we were, on the canal. Yeah. Yes, I think so. But life was pretty normal. I mean, it was pretty good peacetime. I mean, we had a lot of German prisoners, I remember, working in the battalion area, keeping the place tidy and so on. Very efficient. Very efficient.
How did you get on with them? Were they, were they happy to work?
Well, yeah, I think they were, because I think they were glad to be alive and waiting to go home. Mm-hmm. And then I left the South Lanks. Our CO, Colonel Butler, went off. He was a youngish bloke. I mean, you know, CEOs were young at the end of the war. And he wasn't 40 by any means. And he was replaced by a more elderly CO. They were getting back to the sort of regular thing.
Peacetime.
And not only the CO was changed, but another bloke came in to relieve me as second in command. So I went back to command a company.
Yes.
And then I decided, or I don't know quite why, partly again, Colonel Butler went off to command the 9th Parachute Battalion, and he said, why don't you come along? So I did. And I went up to Palestine and I joined the 9th Para Battalion. This would have been in the middle of 46.
What were they doing?
They were down south, in somewhere in Sarafan, Tel Aviv, somewhere down there. A garrison. Trying to keep the peace, I suppose. And I wasn't with them for long, and I was sent back to UK to do a parachute course, which I did at a place called Upper Hayford. And while I was there, I was told, you are not going back to the 9th Para Battalion or the 6th Airborne Division. You are going back to your own regiment to be a territorial adjutant.
What did you think of that?
Well, not much at the time. But Monty, would Monty have then been CIGS? I think he might have been. And he had laid down that the reformation of the territorial army was to be priority one as far as selection and postings and things were required. And it was somebody in the regiment, I suppose, who said I was to go and be adjutant of the 4th Essex. In Ilford, in Essex.
When you had been with the 9 Para, I mean, do you remember what sort of things they were doing to try and keep the peace?
No, I don't. I think I was only with them a week or two.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So it was just, you arrived and then you were...
Yeah, and I think a batch of people were sent back from the 6th Airborne Division to do parachute courses at Upper Hayford.
What did you actually have to do to qualify?
What, a parachute course?
Yes.
You had to do 8 jumps. Mm. You had to do 2 out of a balloon and 6 out of Dakotas, they were.
How did you get on with that?
Well, it was a very... Before you do your first jump, you really thought, what the hell have I volunteered for this? And after you've done a jump, you don't stop talking, apparently. You don't know you're talking, but you're so elated, you know, that you've done it. And, of course, I found that jumping out of a balloon is far worse than jumping out of an aircraft.
But why is that?
Because there's no noise, it's dead silent, and you absolutely drop vertically. You don't do anything because your parachute opens automatically. Well, I don't know what it's like today, but it was in those days.
On a static line.
Yeah, static line. And when you're in an aircraft, there's plenty of noise, you get shoved out into the slipstream, so there's no sensation of falling.
Ah, you're whirled away then.
You get buffeted.
The dead drop.
Dead drop. So that was as far as I got in the parachute regiment. I never really became a member of them.
You never jumped again?
No, I didn't. No, I was never invited to, and never volunteered to jump again. But I went to Ilford earlier. April 47,
I think. I mean, this happened to many officers at the end of the war, that people reverted to substantive rank.
Yeah, I reverted to captain.
Did you ever consider leaving the army at that point and becoming a civilian, or were you dedicated to the army?
Well, I think it was in Germany, before I went to join the South Lancs, sometime in about that 3 months in Germany, I applied for a regular commission.
Yes.
I'd been in London before the war for about 3 years in the building trade, and I'd been in the army then for 7 years. And I reckon I knew more about the army than I did about the building trade. I enjoyed the army more than I did about the building trade, so I thought I would have a go at staying in.
What was it particularly that you enjoyed about army life?
I enjoyed the way of life. I enjoyed the blokes. I enjoyed, the human contact, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you were at Ilford.
In early spring, I think.
Yes. What were the duties then of the adjutant?
Trying to reform the battalion. The territorial battalions disbanded.
At the end of the war?
Yeah. And when I joined the battalion, there was the CO, there was a quartermaster, and myself. And that was it. And our job, I was only there, I joined early spring, 47, and I left about Christmas time because I went to the Staff College in 48. Mm.
So what did you actually do? How did you go about recreating whole battalion with just three of you?
The CO was a territorial officer who had commanded the 4th Essex, had a distinguished war career. They were in the 4th Indian Division most of the time in the desert in Italy and had done very well. And the CO who reformed the battalion in Ilford was the CO for a long time of the 4th Battalion in the war.
Had he been in the castle at Monte Cassino?
I don't know. He was wounded somewhere in Italy, but whether it was before or after Cassino, I don't know. Anyway, he'd been a territorial officer in the 4th Battalion before the war. So he knew the area, he knew all the drill halls, and he set about collecting a lot of wartime 4th Battalion members to come and rejoin the now reforming 4th Battalion in Essex. And by about the end of the year, the battalion strength was about 100. So we had managed to collect from three members, we'd gone up to about 100 by the time I left.
Were these mostly war veterans?
Yes, yes, I think entirely. Mm. Entirely. And I think it wasn't until later on that they started recruiting some new guys. Mm.
Were they mostly local from within?
Within Essex, mm. Yeah. But there were the drill halls, like a drill hall in Epping, a drill hall in Romford, it was the wartime, it was the pre-war
yes.
organisation they were building up again.
And they came back?
Yeah, about 100 blokes.
What did they do, actually, when they attended?
Well, we had an evening a week. We didn't have a camp, I don't think, that year, because it wasn't suitable. Mm. And I don't think it did much training, but it was a get-together, and we were setting up the canteens again, and it was a get-together. Mm. And that was about it. I can't really remember much. Mm. I don't think we achieved much militarily, because we hadn't got the thing, but we were trying to build up. All the effort was on recruiting.
Yeah. And was that all done by personal contact?
Yes.
Did you have?
No, it was all. I think it was all done by personal contact in those days.
Mm. And was the intention simply to create another battalion of infantry as it had been before?
Yeah, yeah.
And presumably most of the men in it would have been trained and experienced.
Correct.
So,
correct. Mm. Yeah.
What happened to you then in 48? You say you went off to Camberley to the Staff College.
I did.
Yes.
I was at Aldershot, actually. There were four divisions of the Staff College then, and I was at in Aldershot.
Do you remember what was on the syllabus?
No, not. I mean, oh well. Yeah, exercises, lectures, tutes, syndicate discussions, heaps of them. But of course, based on wartime organisations. All our exercises were army groups and corps and battalions and based on big armies.
Were they all based on Northwest Europe, or did you consider operations in other areas?
I think we did operation. I think we did exercises, toots and not toots, but map exercises in other areas as well. But mainly, I think European. Mm. And when we went out, of course, on toots, on exercises on the ground, of course, it was all England,
Southern England.
Yes. Yeah.
Were there a lot of telephone battles? You mentioned.
Two, I think, during the year.
And you mentioned the methods of instruction, exercises, toots, telephone battles, things like that. Was there any particular phase of war or aspect of war that was emphasised?
No, we did all the four. We did advance, attack, defence and withdrawal. There were phases of each we did.
Well, what about syndicate work? Was there a lot of that?
Yeah, a lot. A lot. How many were there? 10 in the syndicate, and we each had our own DS.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did you have to do a lot of written work?
Quite a lot. Mm. Yes.
What sort of things were you writing?
Well, it started off very basically in the first term, when I think the first exercise was to write a letter.
And service letter.
Yeah.
Service writing.
And eventually we went on to do appreciations and, yes, you know, and plans and this, that and the other.
Draft orders.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Yeah. Yeah, and the last term I remember we did civil defence.
Ah, what was the content of that then?
Well, riot control and etc. Et cetera.
So aid to the civil power.
Aid to the civil power. Mm. Yeah.
Now you'd been experienced. You'd taken part in a major war as a company commander and so forth. Had anything changed in essence in the 3 years since the end of the war?
No, not then, I don't think. No.
How were you actually assessed on the Staff College course?
Well, you had a report was written on you, which you never saw.
Ah.
So although the confidential report system, you see and sign your confidential report, your Staff College report you never saw. I don't know if they do today, but you never did in those days.
Yeah. So it was a secret report, presumably.
Yeah. And you never knew how you were graded or anything.
Were there any foreign students on the Staff College course at that time?
Do you know? I can't remember. Mm. I can remember airmen and sailors. I can't remember that.
Was there an emphasis on all arms operations?
Oh, yes. Mm. Yes. Mm. Yeah. And, yes. I was thinking about training in nuclear warfare, atomic warfare, but I don't think we did any in 48. I came back to the Staff College in 52 as a DS.
Yes.
And during that time, we were beginning to think about
atomic warfare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was there any study of foreign armies and their methods of fighting, or was it just...
I can remember lectures on the Russian, the Soviet. Yes. Yeah.
What about the German army during the Second World War, and the Japanese? Were they studied in detail?
Don't think so.
Do you remember if you did a battlefield tour?
Yeah, we did. Well, not in 48, I don't think.
Ah.
But I was here again in 52 to 55.
Yes.
And I think we did battlefield two, I think we did. 1 year... The battlefield tour was cancelled for financial reasons. Nothing changes.
It does not.
But I think two battlefield tours. I don't think I went on the first one. I was that time what they call G2 co-ord in the Staff College and not taking a syndicate. So I think it was only my last year as a syndicate DS I went out on the battlefield tour.
Where did you go to?
Car, I think.
Would you have been looking at Goodwood?
Yeah.
The east of Colne.
I can't remember much about it. I don't know which particular battles we did. I've read about so many of these battles, and I can't quite remember which ones we particularly studied on the battlefield tour.
How long was the course? Was just a year?
Yeah, 11 months, I think.
11 months.
Mid-Jan to mid-December. Mm.
And after that...
Well, after I left as a student,
yes,
I was posted as a brigade major to Hong Kong, to a Gurkha brigade.
Is this your first contact with Gurkhas?
Yeah, it was. It was. And I didn't know anything about them. And I didn't speak the language, never have. And Hong Kong, we went to there was one brigade in Hong Kong. And it was called the Kowloon Brigade. And there were two Gurkha battalions and the Buffs, a British battalion. And I went as a brigade major. And my brigadier was a Gurkha called Brigadier de Burgh Morris, who was a very good bloke, Brigadier de Burgh Morris.
What did he set you to do as your role as brigade major?
Well, I was his right-hand man, really, to run his headquarters. But it was a pretty hopeless proposition, because in our headquarters, we only had four officers. It wasn't properly set up as a brigade headquarters, because it was really a static garrison, this brigade in Hong Kong. And they reckon it was a sort of static headquarters, which was a tiny little thing. And it was quite a shock to me to go to this headquarters, having learnt at the Staff College
about a brigade headquarters as such,
to find that this was about a quarter of the size. And I mean, I didn't have a G3, we only had a staff captain. I think it was me, a staff captain, a signal officer, and a camp commandant.
And that was it?
And that was it.
What about other ranks in the headquarters?
Very few.
You must have had a few clerks.
Yeah, we had a few clerks, and a couple of blokes in the intelligence section. However, I was learning this, and I'd never been to the Far East, I'd never met a Gurkha. It took a little time for me to settle down, but the brigadier was frightfully kind and helpful. And then the Buffs were on Hong Kong Island, as indeed there was a Gurkha battalion in Kowloon and one out in the New Territories, that's right. And then the communists started coming down from the north in China. And Hong Kong was reinforced by us, by a division. I think it was called the 40th Division. And we were then uprooted from Kowloon and sent out to the New Territories, the brigade was. And our brigade headquarters was very quickly made up for what a proper brigade headquarters should have been.
And what was that?
Well, I got a G3 and we got... I don't know how many other ranks we had, but we had a defence platoon of Gurkhas, we had military police, you know, and it was all made up to what we'd learnt a brigade headquarters should be.
A field brigade.
Yes. And 40 Div came out with another three brigades. And a plan was made to defend Hong Kong.
How was that going to be done?
Well, by deploying the division out in the New Territories, along and behind the frontier.
Were you thinking of occupying the Jindrunkers line again?
No, I don't think so.
So there were to be new positions?
Yeah, I can remember picketing the heights almost, you know, I mean, rocky heights.
How long was your brigade sector in this defence plan?
I can't remember, I'm afraid. Mm. But it's not a very long frontier with China, and I should think, was it a couple of brigades up, I suppose? I don't know.
Would you have had two battalions forward?
Yeah, I suspect.
Did you have any armour in support?
There were tanks, yes, in Hong Kong. There were indeed, Royal Tank Regiment was there. One regiment, perhaps? Yes.
What was the ground like that you were going to be trying to hold?
Hilly and paddy fields down below. I mean, it's marvellous country. And very steep hills, mountains almost.
So you've got the flat paddy and then you've got the ridges.
Yeah, some little villages round about. But, of course, the communists...